Welcome back. You're listening to In Pursuit of Community with Elevate Branson. I'm your host, Brian Stallings, the CEO and co-founder of Elevate Branson, along with my wife, Amy, the volunteer coordinator. Say hi, Amy.
Hi, Brian.
All right. Well, we're going to jump right in today. So we had lots of questions come in, and we want to help provide a little bit of education around some of these questions. So one of the questions we got was, should I give someone money who is holding a cardboard sign? What do you think, Amy? Would that be yes or no?
That would be a clear no.
And why is that?
Well, because the majority of those out there with a cardboard sign are oftentimes in addiction, or a lot of times this is just kind of what they do every day for a job, you know. And so it's I would not advise to ever give anybody cash that has a cardboard sign. Now, sometimes people will go and grab them a hamburger or something like that. But I remember a sign holder that we came across years ago, and I remember him saying, if somebody gives me, one more person gives me a hamburger, like basically I'm going to scream kind of thing. And yeah, because that's sort of the mentality behind folks that hold the signs. Now, there are people that, you know, are homeless and are struggling, but the majority of the sign holders, they kind of know more of what they're doing. It's more of a job for them.
Well, I would say it even goes deeper than that, though. It goes to the point of you need to build a relationship and hear their story.
Right.
Why are they
right.
on the corner with their sign?
Right.
And take the time, maybe you do take them to buy a hamburger or a cup of coffee or something, but you sit down with them and you interact with them and you have conversation to say, why are you out here holding the sign? What are your roadblocks? What's preventing you from possibly getting a job? And learn about them. And if you don't have the time to invest in somebody in forging a trusting relationship like that, because that takes time, give your money to an organization or ministry that does do that.
Right.
And then that way, you know that they are building a relationship with the individual and not just hand them money.
Right.
You know, my analogy has always been, it feels good for the giver, right, to give money to the person on the street corner.
Right.
But what if that person is in addiction and the $20 you gave them didn't go to food but went to buy a bag of heroin, and that heroin's laced with fentanyl, and that person overdoses and dies? Should you feel good about that? Because you gave that person $20.
Right. And it's a possibility because, again, most of the folks that are flying the signs definitely are in addiction, heavy, heavy addiction. And so, no, it's true. It really is something you'd want to be, really want to think through. But also, I've noticed over the years, a lot of folks who do the signs, they are used to people stopping and talking to them. And it's almost become, yeah, you just have to be careful. It almost becomes like what they're used to, and they tell a sad story, and then people feel sorry for them and give them the money, you know. I'm kind of with you, Brian. I think that if you're not sure, you should at least maybe call an organization that's familiar with this type of thing. Sometimes we get calls from people who ask about somebody who's been on a corner, and we know that person, and we know their story. And so maybe what they're telling that person does not line up with what we know to be true about their situation. So, yeah, that's kind of can be sort of tricky.
Well, this is one that we get a lot of is, should I pay someone's rent who is getting evicted from a motel? Well, how would you answer that one, Amy?
Well, I'm kind of Debbie Downer over here. But again, I would say not necessarily a good idea. We've been doing this, working with folks in these situations for about 15 years now. When we first started, we didn't know a lot of this stuff, so we were just shelling out rent money, and we were, you know, running people bags of food when they would call and tell us a sad story. We'd have what we called emergency boxes in our garage, and we'd run over there, and then they'd open the door of their motel room, and it was like, oh, yeah, you guys don't look like you're in that much need, you know. And so we learned through hard knocks of kind of the things we should do and shouldn't do. So with that situation, I actually just had a volunteer that went out with us on Thursday nights, and she's just got a big, huge heart. And After we finished up for Thursday night, she was on her way home with her husband, and she came over to Applebee's, which is where we go oftentimes after a Thursday night meal delivery with the volunteers and just have a lot of fun. And she said, oh, we were giving a neighbor a ride home, and he was telling me he was going to be kicked out the next day. And what do? I just wanted to run to an ATM and pay his rent. I just felt so bad for him. And I said, well, just for now, don't do anything. We'll find out more information in the morning. So when I did find out more information from Crystal, who works in the front of our community connections department, who kind of knows a lot about the different neighbors that we serve, she said, oh, no, don't. Yeah, tell her not to do that, because, and then she went into all their legitimate reason as to why, you know, it wouldn't be helping him, it would be enabling him. So that's a long answer to a short question, but.
Well, and really, that's the basis of all the answers to these questions
mm-hmm.
that I'm going to still go through,
right.
Is it's about relationship,
yes.
and understanding the person and the situation. It's not always a hard no.
Right.
You know, if
right.
you know the person and they're making great forward strides and they're putting the work in and they're doing things to improve their life and they've had a setback, maybe you do pay the rent.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But don't
Absolutely.
Just blindly go pay it
right.
until you have that relationship there.
Right. Or you've researched it a little bit more to know if it's a legit story or not.
Exactly. Exactly. So another one that we get is I want to adopt a family at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
How should I go about that? What can I do? And a lot of times when mm-hmm. I hear this, question about I want to adopt a family is I want to be there to present the gifts.
Right.
Walk us through a little bit of that, Amy.
Well, actually, you know, I think most of us have been a part of that. I remember a job I had before we started doing the Elevate Outreach, and we did adopt families through our work. So there's like five or six different families, and different groups of us adopted different families, and it was actually in a motel, so we went there, all like six of us, all smiling with all these presents and stuff. And I just remember going in there feeling like, something's wrong with this. This doesn't feel right. They have more presents in here than I do, which that's not a big deal as far as, you know, me wanting more presents, but that wasn't it. I felt just like, wow, you know, I think this isn't how it's supposed to be. You know, I am all for obviously helping people, but it seemed very uncomfortable for the family themselves. The kids were, of course, super excited because half their room now is filled up with presents, and we're all standing there with big smiles on our faces. But honestly, Mom seemed a bit uncomfortable, grateful, but uncomfortable, and I didn't see Dad anywhere in the room. And as I've come to find out through understanding how this works, it's hard for Dad. He's ashamed. He's embarrassed, and oftentimes he will not be there.
If Dad's even in the picture.
If Dad's in the picture, he will oftentimes not be there because he feels like he should be providing for his family and whatever all the details are. You know, we don't always have to know that, but it's just, I left kind of feeling like there's got to be a better way to do this, to help people at Christmas, but do it in a way that, I don't know, didn't feel kind of icky like that to me.
Well, I think there's other factors, too, that you have to think about. Mm-hmm. One is a lot of times people in motels are highly transitional.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have two or three kids and they have to move,
right?
What are they going to be able to take with them?
Yeah.
What can they pack in their car?
Right.
And overloading them with Christmas gifts.
Mm-hmm.
They may not even be able to take most of those with them.
Right. Or fit them in the room that they're currently staying
Or fit
in.
Them in the room
we
that they're living in. Yeah, because the room is small.
Right.
The second thing is how many of those items could potentially be taken back to the
mm-hmm.
store
right.
and received cash for.
Yep.
And
Absolutely.
So that's something you have to be aware of. Oftentimes, like you had said, Mom is embarrassed
mm-hmm.
a little bit because
mm-hmm.
she can't provide. If there is a dad in the picture, he doesn't want to be around when that happens because it makes him feel like a failure because
right.
he hasn't been able to provide
right.
those Christmas gifts for his family. And so the thing I would look at And that what we have done in the past is having a reduced priced Christmas store where people can still buy presents, but they get to buy them at a discount. That keeps their dignity and value intact. They can also work for those Christmas presents. And so that is something that I would consider way before doing an adoptive family.
And they're also, and when that happens, they're teaching their children, because their children are usually with them, or their children want to buy them something for Christmas so they can buy mom and dad something for a dollar that's special for mom and dad.
It's not, it doesn't feel near as good for the giver, you know, but it's much more meaningful and practical for the receiver. The other thing that I would say on the adopt-a-family is, what are the things that a family can, again, utilize and take with them?
Right.
So toys may not be the best thing. Like you had said, they may want to buy something for mom and dad. Well, we know in some of the, I think they call them, good behavior buck stores that some of the schools have, good sense stores, things like that, that a lot of times the kiddos will use those bucks to buy toiletries for the family.
Right.
And so those are good options. What about sleeping bags and tents? Should I buy a sleeping bag and a tent for a homeless person?
Well, I'm answering a lot of these questions from the School of Hard Knocks, because a lot of these things we've done in our past, when we, again, when we first started out doing some of the things we get to do today, and made some, you know, well-meaning, just did some things that we thought was going to be helpful for people, and turned out that people can be pretty creative on if they want to, like, kind of swindle you a little bit. And so we used to give out sleeping bags and tents, and then I believe it was Walmart got a hold of us one day and said, hey, a lot of the folks you're giving these sleeping bags to are returning them. And we're like, what? Like, we didn't even think about that. And so we, it's not that we don't, you know, help people with tents and sleeping bags. We do it in a different way now. We allow them to come, and we provide some opportunity for them to maybe work off some work, give them the opportunity to maybe work for a tent or work for a sleeping bag with them doing some things around the facility. But we also write Elevate Branson on it really big so that if they opt to go back and trade it in on cash, they know they can't do that. So, I mean, again, it was just learning that, hey, that can happen.
Yeah, and I would say no on that, because many times, and we'll talk about this here a little bit, but when something is given to you, something that you haven't earned or have value in, you don't tend to respect it or care for it.
Right.
And so oftentimes we'll find sleeping bags and tents in the woods that are just left.
Right. And they're pretty new.
Yeah. But they maybe use them once or twice or
move on. They
don't
value them. Right.
They don't value it, so they don't, don't take care of that. And again, it goes down to a relationship of what's the next step? What's the plan? Is the plan to always be in the woods? Or what is the next? So it's it's spending time with that person to know what that looks like.
Right, exactly.
Another one we get a lot is, should I give someone money for gas? Now, all of these questions typically are, any of them that deal with money is no. Never give money, period. Never give cash. That's just my rule of thumb. If somebody's standing on a corner and I want to, and they're holding a sign and they want money, I might engage with them and invite them to go have coffee, and I'll pay for the coffee, but I'm not just giving them money.
Right.
Or if somebody's needing gas, I'm not going to give them the money for the gas.
Right.
I would go with them maybe to put gas in their car that I would then pay for. Whenever you give money just blindly, you're just never 100% sure how that's going to be used.
Right, because some people do this. This is what they do to get by. They know what they're doing oftentimes.
And then I think the thing is, you have to have enough trust and relationship to ask, okay, what are you going to do when your car's empty again? Because inevitably your rent comes back up.
Right.
Your car runs out of gas again. What's the plan to make it sustainable?
Right.
And so those are all questions that need to be answered through a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember a story that we read about. I think it might have been in one of Ruby Payne's books, possibly, or could have been Toxic Charity. But some teachers had seen a couple of girls at school in the same clothes multiple days in a row. And by this time, the clothes were dirty, and so they took a little pool together of teachers, and they purchased a bunch of clothes for the girls, and then they presented them to the girls, like, on Friday so they could take them home over the weekend. And on Monday, they were back in the same old clothes. And the teachers asked, "Hey, girls, what happened to the $200 worth of clothes we just bought you?" "Oh, Mom and Dad took those back to the store to get a refrigerator." Well, the reason they got a refrigerator was because that was an immediate need. Their refrigerator was broken. They couldn't store food. But the teachers hadn't built a relationship with the family unit to find out that, or they would have maybe gone about that plan differently. And so that's where it really is important to dig through those questions and build those relationships. This is one that has come up recently because panhandlers have gotten a little more savvy to pull on heartstrings. So you will see sometimes a family or a mom and some kids now standing on a corner.
And the puppy.
And the puppy, yep. Or you might see a pregnant lady and husband or fiance or significant other. And so one of the questions we had was, should I let a young pregnant homeless couple stay at my house just for the weekend? What would you say to that one, Amy?
That's a big no. Yeah.
It's a big no, huh?
That's a big no. Because, again, you know, you're wanting to help the couple. You feel very sorry for them because of their situation. But there's just a lot of reasons why that's not a good idea. And one of them is when you put people in your house, you can't legally get them out of
your house. You may not be able to get them out. That's right. It may take a while.
Yeah. So you might be trying to help that couple, and they just seem so nice and sweet. Let them in your house. They're in a room downstairs somewhere. And then it comes time for them to leave, and they don't leave.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon.
Right.
Like that, you read about this all the time, and it's because it's true. It does happen. Or, you know, it comes time for them to leave. Well, they've got nowhere to go still, just like they didn't when you first let them in a couple of days ago. So now what do you do?
Right.
You still feel bad because now you're going, okay, go back on the street. I mean, it's just not a good way to help the couple. There's other ways to do it, but that's not a great way to do it.
And all of these things really require, again, relationship, but to direct them to the right resources. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes you may not know who that is, but there's an organization or church in your community that does.
Right.
And so direct them there. In that situation, you know, I think what needs to be discussed is, where's family at? Mm-hmm. Who's their closest relative in the area? Why can't they stay there? What's going, you know, and really dig through that.
How'd they get there in the first place?
Like, yeah.
How did they just end up on that corner? Like, where'd they come from? What's their situation?
Yeah, another question I get a lot is, my friend got hurt and now can't work. Can we help with her doctor's bill? And that would be also probably a no. And the reason I say that is because there's systems in place for that. So one of those would be, again, always start with family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where's your family at? How can your family help in this situation? Second would be, let's look at the options that you have from the medical provider.
Right.
Do they have a payment plan? Do they have some way of you being able to make a $5 a week payment, or just something to keep it out of collections? And then the third would be to resource any agencies that may have other avenues that you could go down. You know, do they qualify for SSI, SSDI, are they already on Social Security, those types of things. And so there's just a lot of discovery that needs to be done before you just help that person with their medical bills. Another question that we get, especially around Christmas time, should our church put on a free Christmas store?
Well, I just feel like we keep saying no, 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 no. We are saying no, but we're not saying don't help people. We're saying there's better ways to do it that helps people in a way that their dignity stays intact and they start to maybe build a relationship with you, or you direct them in a path that can help them not just in that moment, but kind of long term. So as far as doing a Christmas, well, I'm sorry, what was
A church wanting to put on a free
a
Christmas
free
store.
Christmas store? So again, in the very beginning days, I think we did a little bit of that, not understanding a lot of what we've learned over the years. But what we started to see was just kind of a entitlement attitude, especially after we had done something like that for a couple years in a row. It just became more of a, hey, when are you doing this? What do you mean you're not doing this? Wait, what do you mean I can only have one gift? It just kind of turned again where it didn't feel right. And so through learning and talking to other agencies and reading and just researching, we found out that really the best way to do something like that again is to do a low-cost type Christmas store where your church can donate items and then you can put a dollar amount on them. Maybe it's a 20% of what the item's worth, so maybe a $2 item you sell it for 20 cents.
Yeah.
People can do that. They
You
can
know,
do that.
yeah, again, all of this takes relationship, and relationships take time. And I get it. People don't have a lot of time. That's great. And it's easy to just give money or write a check to that individual because one, it feels good. Two, you think the problem goes away. But it would be better to give that money or a check to an organization that can spend the time with them. It'd be kind of like what we've seen with some charities that go overseas and they build wells in countries so that they can have fresh water. They build a well, the village has fresh water, and then they leave. The problem is they never trained the villagers on how to maintain or repair the well. So after they leave, the well breaks. Guess what? The villagers go back to how they were getting their water before, taking buckets down to the
Because
stream and
they
pulling
can't
out because they
afford
don't know
or
how to
don't know
repair the
how.
well. They can't afford to repair the well because nobody showed them or, how to do it, where
Walk
to
them
get
through
parts,
that.
all that kind of stuff. And so it's the same type of thing. We can give money for gas, but if we don't spend the time training them and educating them on how to become sustainable, they're going to need gas again.
So it's a bigger picture. There's a bigger picture here. You, again, can pay somebody's night in a motel, but then they're in the exact same position the next night. So really, I think one of the reasons that we feel that God has directed us down this path is to help our neighbors with the big picture. To understand it takes time, it takes training to know how to do some of these things with people, and then coming alongside them and walking through it with them. And we get to see that. We see that on a regular basis now with some of the programs that we offer, and it's just a beautiful thing.
Well, and I think I would not encourage anybody to just park their car, get out, start talking to the panhandler and building a relationship until they understand how to have that conversation.
A little training.
Yeah, because there's a couple of different voices that we tend to use as individuals, one being the parent voice. And when we speak to somebody in the parent voice is the authoritative, directive, judgmental. You need to do this. You should do this. Why aren't you doing it this way? That's wrong. That's bad. That's stupid. That's immature. That's ridiculous. Well, I can just tell you the reason that person's on the corner is probably because that individual has had that voice talk to them a lot. And they are not going to be receptive to this sweet volunteer wanting to help them in that same way. The way we need to talk to individuals and just individuals in general is what we call the adult voice. It's a non-judgmental voice. It's free of negative or non-verbal cues. It's factual and it's often in question format, So tell me, what's going on? Why are you in this position? What family do you have? And it's very It's very equal, I guess I would
Right.
say. You know, it's helping them think through in what ways can we resolve this? In what ways, what do you think you need to get off the corner here
Right.
or whatever your next step is?
Right.
And choices are very important to help people understand choices. And if you can give a person a choice, something could be as simple as, well, if you choose to get a job, you might be able to afford an apartment. Or if you choose to stand here on the corner, you might be choosing to stay unemployed. But when you put it in a choice format, it allows them to see the choices instead of the do this, don't do that voice.
Right. That's true.
And so there's really a lot to having those conversations, which again is a way that you can get plugged into an organization and learn, or you can give the resources to the organization to do it for you.
Yes.
And there's some rules of thumb that we use. We say never do for the poor what they have or could have the capacity to do for themselves. So it's interesting. We see this or hear about this a lot in third world mission trips. A church wants to go over to Honduras and paint a building. And so they'll have a bunch of teenagers or kids go over and paint the building in Honduras while all the locals are sitting there watching. And then they leave after the week, and a new mission trip comes in, and they paint the same church, and all the locals are sitting there watching. And so they're doing for the poor what they could be doing for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the better way to do that, it's not near as fun. It's not as fun for the mission people, but is to go and empower the locals to do the work,
right.
Pay the locals to do the work, teach and train the locals on how to do the work, and build relationships with the locals.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do the work for them.
I love the story that you share about when you went to Haiti and the trash. Why don't you share that? That's a good story.
Yeah, so Haiti, like a lot of third world countries, have no real trash service or anything. So it's very common for people just to throw their candy bar wrappers or their soft drink cups, just whatever it is, just down on the ground, wherever they are. And I was at a school for about 400 kids that were too poor to attend school because school in Haiti you have to pay for,
mm-hmm.
and you have to have shoes and clothing and certain items. And so this school was actually developed for poor kids in the outer regions to attend. But that was their mentality. And so I didn't like that, I guess I should say. And so I started building a relationship with the kids and said, hey, you need to take pride in your school. And don't you want it to look good for, you know, your family and friends that you bring here? And so I spent enough time with them where I could engage them in this way of thinking. And so we took sticks and we drove a nail through the stick. And by the end of the time I was there, they kept that school spotless,
mm-hmm.
picking up trash and
yeah.
sticking it in one area. And they were proud of it.
Right.
They had earned it. They had
right.
earned, you know, that pride because they were actually physically
right.
doing something.
And
so.
Now they saw that it did make them feel better by
yeah.
working, by doing something, taking care of
well,
something.
Well, what if my neighbor's house burns down? Should I help them by getting them some clothing tomorrow?
Absolutely. I mean, there's emergent situations like that. Or yes, absolutely. If we know something like that's happened, somebody's been in a bad car accident, yeah, the church comes together. They do a meal train. They come and they help with their kids. They help with, you know, financially. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so we're not saying no to giving.
Right.
We're saying no to the types of giving.
Right.
So when it's emergent giving,
mm-hmm.
we want to be there, right? But we want to
yes.
limit one-way giving to emergency situations. So
right.
what I mean by one-way giving is that I'm the giver and there's a receiver.
Right.
When we're talking about helping somebody long-term,
mm-hmm.
there's an equal exchange there.
Mm-hmm.
We're both giving and receiving.
Right.
I'm giving of my time and educating and teaching
right.
and training. They're building a relationship. They're putting work in whatever that may be, but there's equal, we're equal recipients, both in giving and receiving in that relationship. We also want to strive to empower the poor through employment. So we are in an economy in the United States that takes money to survive. I mean, it just does. Mm-hmm. Even the panhandler is standing on the corner for money. And so we want to strive to empower people to get a job. And we do that through employment. Mm-hmm. We also, before we give, we listen closely to the people that we're seeking to help, because we're asking questions. We're trying to figure out, help them see choices and next steps. And we're trying to make sense of it all. And so what's really important is that, is not only listening closely, but especially to the things that aren't being said. So if I ask the question, do you have family in the local area, and I don't get an answer, I'm going to dive more into that. And I'm going to find out why their relationship with their family may be broken. What sometimes the perception is not reality. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it could be I left the house and didn't come back because I thought my mom hated me forever. But in reality, it was just a moment in time where maybe they were arguing. And if we can contact mom, mom wants to welcome them back.
Right.
And then the last thing that we do is kind of like the doctor's creed, you know, the Hippocratic Oath is above all else, do no harm. And so we have to be careful. Again, if I give that panhandler on the corner $20 and they buy a bag of heroin and overdose and die, I've done harm.
Right.
And so we want to make sure that we don't do harm. And one of the reasons it's really important to not just give one way is it really creates this dependency progression. We've talked about it in our previous podcast, but it's, if you think about it with your kids growing up, and it's not that it's bad with your kids, but you can just picture the progression. You give once and you elicit appreciation. I always use birthdays as an example, right? If I do the same thing on the birthday every year, my kid knows when it comes around to the birthday, these things are going to happen, right? So if I give once, I elicit appreciation, very thankful, thanks for doing that. When I give the second time, it creates anticipation. When I give the third time, it creates expectation. It's like, oh, my birthday's coming up again. I expect this, that my parents are going to get me this gift, or I expect this. And when I give four times, it becomes entitlement. Well, I'm entitled to that. I deserve that, or I earned that, or whatever it may be. And then I give five times, then I establish dependency where that person needs me to give that gift to them. And then we've robbed them of their dignity and value, because now their dignity and value is dependent on me. And I don't want that responsibility. So that's kind of how the dependency progression works. And so we try to not do that. Some of the other questions that we often get asked is, if they have money for beer and cigarettes, why do they need food? Amy, what would you say to that one?
Well, I think we've learned over the years in the poverty culture that entertainment is very, very important. And so sometimes we might go to a motel room to drop off some food on a Thursday night, and that individual might have a big screen TV in their motel room. Maybe it's a 70-inch, you know, and you think, wait a minute, we're giving them food, and yet they have this great big flat screen TV in there. But for that individual, it's really important to be able to have relationships with the people around them. And if you've got the big flat screen TV in your room, guess what? That's where everybody's going to be hanging out. You're going to be pretty popular with your friends. I mean, that's just part of the poverty culture.
Well, it's not beer and cigarettes, though.
No, it's not beer and cigarettes. Beer and cigarettes would go more towards a way to de-stress.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's two different topics. But the beer and cigarettes would be, so for us, when we get stressed out, what do we do?
Yeah, we eat.
We eat ice cream when we go to a movie, right? They eat lots of
Yeah,
popcorn.
absolutely.
But a lot of our neighbors that are in poverty, they can't get to a movie. They don't have transportation. They don't have money to get into a movie. There's just a lot of reasons why they're not able to do some of the things that we can do that might be a little bit more on the healthy side. Maybe we join a gym, right? And we go work out when we're stressed out. But again, our neighbors, they can't get to a gym. They can't afford to go to a gym. And so if you're in a motel room or you're in a situation where you can't go anywhere because you don't have transportation or you don't have the money to do that, well, you know, one way people de-stress is to smoke, and another way is to drink. And so that tends to go that direction a lot with the folks that we serve.
And I think oftentimes we look at individuals and their situations through the lens that we were raised with.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the questions that I'll get to is, why don't they just get a job?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if I look at that situation through my lens, I had a mom and a dad to encourage me or push me to get an education, to work hard, to be proud of what I achieved and put me on a path of planning and all that. If you don't have that person in your life that ever showed you those things, getting a job's not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
And especially keeping a job is
right.
not that easy. And so I think we have to realize that everyone wasn't raised through our same lens. And the thing about the beer and the cigarettes and the TV is that when you're living day to day, your life is incredibly stressful, because if you weren't raised with the ability to plan, you're just trying to survive the day. And the next day is just another day of survival. You're not planning anything. You're just hoping to make it through the day. And so your use of cigarettes and beer is often to offset some of that stress. Your level of entertainment is because you need relationships oftentimes to survive the day. I might need Bob, who has the car, and so I'm going to get the biggest TV so I can be friends with Bob, because I may need a ride from Bob. And so we can't look at it through the lens that we were raised with. Another question is, why do they have so many kids? Well, it's just a fact that a married woman who's a college graduate has 1.1 kids per family household. But a woman who didn't complete high school will have 3.3. And oftentimes that 3.3 could be from three different dads. And men in poverty are oftentimes lovers or fighters, and when they get in a fight, they end up incarcerated, or they move on to the next woman, right? And so it's a way of the mom staying connected to the man to have a child. There's just a lot of dynamics there. So just to recap kind of what we talked a little bit about here, it begins with a relationship. And relationships are built on trust, and trust takes time. So build that relationship, but know that it's going to take a lot of time. And if you don't have the time, support an agency or organization that does. Be sure to listen to individuals as you're building that trust and building that relationship, especially to what's not being said. Give them choices. Help them see different avenues, that if they choose a negative option, that it may have not a great consequence. Help them see a choice. If they choose a better opportunity, this may be a better outcome. Never do for others what they can do for themselves. And most importantly, never give cash. Empower, don't enable, which means unless it's an emergency situation, make sure that there's equal exchange there. Remember that the mother or the wife or the female in the relationship, she's going to be the one in charge. She's going to be one calling the shots, because oftentimes the men will flee. and understand that to move from poverty, an individual has to break a relationship, oftentimes with their friends or family. And we've talked about that in the past on past podcasts, so you can go back to season one and listen to that. So a lot of good questions came in and lots of good things to talk about there. So just put them into action. Start with that. So we've got Wacky Wednesday news coming up here, Amy.
Yep.
And I thought of you on this one.
Oh, you thought of me because of Wacky Wednesday news?
Yep. Well, the this woman faces felony charges for forgetting to return Sabrina the Teenage Witch VHS tape 20 years ago. And I know you were just saying how you miss the video stores where you could go.
I really do.
You'd run into local people in the community.
Right. We looked forward to it. Like, I'm officially old. But, yeah, it was fun to take the kids on Friday nights and leave with a stack of six VHS tapes. It was really, I do miss that. But, you know, times, they are changing.
So this woman in Texas received a nasty shock while trying to update her married name. She was a criminal for a crime she didn't even remember committing. In fact, she was guilty of a crime most people of a certain age have probably committed. 20 years ago, she forgot to return a VHS tape.
Like a library book, huh?
Yeah, so she had gone to do that and found this. This was actually a felony charge
that
was on there from years ago. And she doesn't even... remember renting it because she doesn't even like that show or wouldn't have watched it, but somebody in her household apparently did, and it said that the charge stated that she embezzled a certain video cassette tape, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, of the value of $58.59.
Gosh.
And so apparently it's a struggle to get this taken off her record. It said, when they ran my criminal background check, all they're seeing is these two words, felony embezzlement. So it doesn't say what it's for
horrible.
On her background check. So could you imagine going to get a job and that pops up on her background?
Yeah, you're like, seriously, it was just a video, I swear.
So it says the Cleveland County District Attorney's Office in Texas there. They will dismiss the case against her, but she will still need legal intervention to have the felony charges cleared from her record.
Oh, my goodness. That is wacky.
So it just goes to show everyone should double-check their closets for any unreturned VHS tape rentals. So that story made me think of you, Amy.
And why is that?
Because you like the VHS story.
Oh, I thought
rentals.
You meant because I can be a little forgetful at times.
Well, that too. So, $1 Wednesdays today. So if you're listening to this podcast, we started $1 Wednesday. It's just a gentle reminder that you can make a $1 donation to Elevate Branson, or you can add as many numbers behind that one as you'd like. 6 0s, 7 0s, 7 1s.
Surprise us.
Yeah, just surprise us. You can go to our website at elevatebranson.org and make your $1 Wednesday donation. Well, Amy, do you have our scripture of the week?
I do. And this is, to me, probably the backbone of Christianity, probably the most important verse in all the Bible. It's John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. That's the hope. That's the great hope that the Lord offers those who turn to him. So, yeah, pretty vital.
Well, that's a good scripture. Do you have any new news for us? New news here at Elevate this week? Do you have any of that?
New news?
New news. Any Elevate updates?
I know the playground's coming along, the kids' playground in the back. I looked out there today and saw a slide up, and then I saw a couple workers out there putting in a nature trail, which I'm excited to use.
And we've updated the website now so that you can actually donate for specific items so that we can put your name on it. So
yep.
You can actually be the donor for the slide,
mm-hmm.
and you can have your name
yeah.
put on that. So
it's gonna be
go to
fun.
Our website, click on the donate tab, and you
mm-hmm.
can find all that information out mm-hmm. on how to do that.
Well, like the playground, it's for kids who do not have access to playgrounds living in the motels. All they have is a parking lot to play in. So it's going to be exciting to see their little faces and just listen to their giggles.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And then on August 25th from 11:30 to 1, we will have the Small Business Development group here, as well as SCORE, to talk about resources that small businesses can obtain, such as funding and grants, and how to go about that. And that will be on our website as well. Lunch is provided. There is a $15 admission price, but if you're already an Elevate Entrepreneur graduate, it's only $10.
Oh, nice.
So if you want to learn how to fund your business, that is a great workshop to come to.
Yep, good stuff.
And then yesterday we celebrated another scooter send-off, and he was from Dominican Republic.
Yes, I loved his accent. It was great.
Yeah, so we've had some from Turkey, Nigeria, Dominican Republic. We have scooter classes coming up next week, I believe. So if you want to get in a scooter class, be sure to go to the website, get your information submitted, and get signed up for that scooter class so you can beep beep have transportation to your job. And listener names, any new listener names? We've got Elevators, Hooligans, Do-Gooders, and Big Dreamers. Did we have any new ones come in this week?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so that's still on the list. So, again, my favorite still probably Elevators or Hooligans. Do-Gooders or Big Dreamers, do you like that for the listening
honestly,
audience?
I don't like any of them.
You don't like any? Well, you
no.
better come up with one then.
We really need some creative people to help us out here.
That's right.
Give us some ideas.
Come on, give us some ideas. You can reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn,
yep,
wherever
creative.
You get your social
be
media.
Creative.
And you can also listen and subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts on Spotify, Branson mm-hmm. Podcast Network, iHeartRadio.
Yep.
There's a lot of them out there. Just hit that subscribe link, and then you'll get notified when a new podcast drops each week. I think that's going to wrap us up for today, Amy.
Yep, I think so. Lots of information.
Well, thanks for listening. Come back next week. We'll have a lot more exciting news for you. You've been listening to In Pursuit of Community with Elevate Branson.